66, on the 22nd of July, 2011. James, welcome back to the couch.
Hi there, Ian. The couch is really quite good right now, isn't it?
It's a great couch to be on. And here we are talking about what's happening in the world of broadcast and entertainment technology.
And and we have a few categories there, don't we? We go for business, technology, content delivery.
Yep. What's happening in the world of mobile and portable entertainment, gaming, and the other category, which sometimes has interesting things in it, sometimes it has nothing in it. But, you know, it's kind of life.
You just don't get lucky. So, we've got a few. This is couch number 166. Mm. Send us your feedback. Feedback at onthecouchpodcast.com. Write us a review on iTunes or just generally tweet about us. I think we have a Twitter account as well. So, what is happening?
Well, in the business category, we're seeing a lot of fallout from the News International hacking kind of drama. Mm. One of the things that might have been caught up with that is that the regulator in Australia has started to raise questions about Foxtel's acquisition of Austar. This hasn't actually happened yet, but it's the first time. I mean, Foxtel's been chasing Austar for many years, but it's the first time when everyone's agreed on a price.
And for the benefit of the non-Antipodeans in the audience, what's the position? I mean, as far as I know, Foxtel and Austar both operate satellite services. There's some peculiar thing in Australia about satellite guys having regionality and cable guys having regionality or something.
So the way Foxtel and Austar have carved it up, they compete together on the Gold Coast, but which is a city in Queensland. Aside from that, even though they share the same satellite, they share the same satellite video, in fact, they have different conditional access systems, so the satellite is simulcrypted. But aside from that, they have different boxes, they have different set-top boxes, different guides and so on. But they don't actually compete in terms of service in the same geographical areas. So,
which is nuts because they're both satellite. Or Foxtel has cable as well, right?
Foxtel does have cable as well. So they actually provide Foxtel over Telstra's cable. Telstra provides the cable in a couple of capital cities. But the idea here is that Foxtel would buy Austar.
Well, clearly a lot of savings could be made there, couldn't they?
I mean, you would have thought so. Absolutely. I mean, but the Australian Competition and Consumer Association, the ACCC, has delayed its decision now until September. It originally kind of said, well, we don't see any real problems here. Now it might have found some problems. And whether this is related to the general...
It does sound a bit odd. I mean, it must be historical the way that's happened in Australia. I mean, if they don't compete already, what's the problem with them?
Well, what's the ACCC saying is that, well, they might not have competed in the past, but now that the NBN, the National Broadband Network in Australia, is rolling out, so this is basically fibre to the everywhere, it may well be that they could compete in the future, and if they decide to compete in the future, then they can't compete if they're all the one company. I think that's the argument.
Is it the National Billabong Network?
Broadband. It's going to be huge.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, but fibre to the Billabong. Anyway.
yeah, that's right.
I guess, yeah, because even though I guess you don't compete, there's still a benchmark to see how much one of them charges versus the other one charges.
Yeah.
You've got a bizarre thing that the National Broadband Network presumably is being rolled out by Telstra, which is the Tel part of Foxtel.
Correct.
So it seems like everyone's, you know, kind of, it's a bit like the car industry. There's no, everyone's related to everyone. It's like a small Yorkshire village.
Yeah, that's true. That'll be interesting to see how that happens. They're seeking more responses by the 11th of August before making a final determination on September 8th. So we'll track that, of course, on the couch and let you know how that goes.
Yeah, I guess on the other business side, there's been cracking results out from both, I think, Microsoft and Apple
indeed, last week. Yeah, so they've both been doing very well. Apple, especially, obviously, with its iPad and iPhone products, selling squillions of them.
And I saw some great stats about the amount of cash Apple has in the bank, which is higher than the gross national product of Sri Lanka.
That's astounding. It's a lot of money. And
$76 billion or something.
Oh, my goodness. You know? That's enormous. And they've been made, what was it, $6.7 billion profit? Like, their gross margin is almost 30%. It's for a quarter. It's astonishing. It's
outrageous, yeah. If only I still had Apple stock, but unfortunately I had to sell it to buy an Apple computer. Many people.
There is within spitting distance to being the biggest company listed in the world, so.
Wow. There we go.
And Microsoft has done as well except that its Windows operating system has kind of slumped a little bit, and Windows Live is not done so well. But aside from that, almost in every category, Microsoft is cracking on. So they've been working hard at that as well. So hopefully with lots more money, they'll spend it more on advancing technology, perhaps, James.
Well, I'd like to think so. Yeah, I guess that's one thing that, you know, if you think of Apple and Microsoft, Microsoft does invest in a lot of kind of external marketing, and maybe that's more the Bill and Melinda Gates kind of selling, but they do a lot of fundamental research, whereas maybe Apple does that as well, but you just don't, nobody hears anything
you
about
don't it. See it's all very secretive, isn't it? Yes. So while we're talking about technology, we've got a note from Arkiva saying, just by the way, guys, now to be fair, Arkiva runs a fair amount of the broadcast infrastructure in the UK. They're saying, well, watch out, guys, when you're trying to do your over-the-top services in the UK, because we're not sure that the internet can cope with all that sort of bandwidth being dedicated to video.
Well, they've already kind of said that, haven't they, with all the BT stuff and UView. And no, of course it can't. Well, that's the answer, isn't it? Of course it can't cope with it.
Yep.
Until you put fibre to the village. Which is beginning to happen, but the next generation network's going to take some time.
Yeah, in fact, to roll out. Just winding its way to Putney, where I used to live. So sadly, I can't get it now. But that would be nice. but speaking of bandwidth, Virgin is saying they've cracked on with 1.5 gigabits worth of broadband speed, which is apparently.
But then that's just at the edge, isn't it? Because you've then got if everyone starts using that, you've then got kind of issues. I mean, there's even been talk here in the US about the impact of caps and how looking at what I was listening to a streaming media briefing and saying, you know, that if people are watching 1080p streaming, which isn't out of the question, and they're doing it on a number of TV sets, you probably only have like 9 or 10 hours of viewing. And even if you're on an iPad or something and you're in a 4G hotspot, you're going to very quickly hit your cap. So caps are becoming, it used to be uncapped, unlimited, but now people are thinking, actually that's a bit tricky. We've already seen people like Netflix in the US introduce special streaming bandwidth specifically for Canada, where Rogers Cable has had caps in for some time. I think it just raised the caps a little bit there or changed the pricing plan.
The problem's really, you're right, not getting it to anywhere vaguely near the customer, but the shared last mile in the terms of cable, fine, 1.5 gigabits is plenty. But, you know, and I have a 30 megabit service in my place, but the problem is that...
Rate.
Yep. But I can actually push it to getting 30 megabits, doing some of the testing, speed test sort of stuff. But once it hits my wireless network, which again, there's a squillion wireless networks around where I live, I'm lucky to get 15 or 20 megabits between PC, my laptop, and my base station. So what's the point of having a faster internet connection if I can't get it to my PC, which is the only thing that counts in the end?
Well, that's why people are wiring their homes, aren't they? Putting wires in. I mean, if you know, you'll put wires in if you're building your own home. I guess, you know, we're both in rented accommodation, aren't we? So we're slaves. I've switched to a 5 gigahertz network where I am to try and give myself a bit more. It's not bad. I mean, my example this week was I upgraded to Apple's new Lion OS, which I had to download.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is like a 2.5 gig download or something.
Oof, okay.
But it only took probably 45 minutes.
That's all right.
So, or maybe less. I mean, so I think they've done a good job of rolling it out to the edge of the network. And then I've got 20 megabits per second here. Obviously I'm in the valley, so you'd think if it doesn't work here, it's not going to work anywhere. But I'd be wondering, you know, if your average, has Apple gone too fast too soon by saying like, we're getting rid of physical media and, you know, this is your way you're going to get your OS now. Because if you're an Apple user in a, you know, technology barn at the end of a 2 megabit DSL line and you want to upgrade to Lion, you're stuck.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, well, take, you know,
I had a crack at, given that I couldn't, and the other problem in my place is that, fine, 802.11g, 54 megabits gives you about 25 in real life, but from upstairs, diagonally kind of piercing the floor, which clearly has something in it that doesn't like wireless, you get almost nothing. All right, so let's give a crack at the new Soulwise over the powerline connection that does is meant to do 1 gigabit.
Oh, right. Okay.
And at the moment, I get about 2 megabits out of it. So I think my electrical wiring is crap as well. So it's all a challenge getting this data around the home.
I had some problems there. I think it was down to, I don't know if I ISO, but sometimes you can get some of these cheap CFL lights can knock out power line because they put so much white noise into the power line system.
Yeah, I do have a lot of fluorescent lights in my place, so maybe that's it.
Yeah. So it could be something like that.
I could just sit around in the dark and I have great bandwidth. This
or some, or even something with a cheap Chinese switch mode power supply, which again chucks loads of white noise into the power circuit. So it is tricky. And maybe you've got super insulating carpet underlay or something with foil backing, which gives you a nice little...
It could well be that. It wouldn't surprise me in terms of the wireless stuff.
Some of this, this lay-it-yourself home flooring stuff has silverized underlay kind of sound insulation and heat insulation, which would probably cut any signals going up and down.
Interesting. So it is a challenge.
It's like putting a tinfoil hat on, you know?
Exactly. Well, while we're talking about getting content around the home, Netflix has raised its prices from $10 a month in the US to $16 a month.
Really? I should check that, being a subscriber. But that's only I think that's only for the people delivering physical media. That's
yeah. So you can still pay $8 for just streaming, which is still a pretty good deal. But if you want, apparently for streaming and one DVD at a time, it was $10. Now it's $16. So they're obviously trying to push people to just stream.
I think what they also seem to have done is removed quite a lot of stuff from the streaming package and making it more premium. They're just trying to introduce differential pricing. Certainly, I was in the middle of watching a series and it disappeared. But I guess, we talked about this before, is when suddenly some of the content reaches its expiry date, they have to remove it from the system. There's no kind of user-friendly way of seeing where, how many queues. Well, they could have looked at it and said, actually we're going to piss off so many customers here because they're in halfway through the series. They must... That data is available. Whether they can mine it is another thing.
Yeah, or do anything about it. User-friendly way, you're right,
And whether there's much competition for that, I mean, that's what we're going to talk later on about this Roku box, but I mean, I'd be quite interested in watching Amazon stuff on my TV. But I can't. They're also, they're saying that some other like premium providers are going to look at being able to, like BSkyB in the UK launched their Sky Go service in the last week or so, I think, which is iPad and iOS stuff. But they're even looking at being able to make that available if you don't have a Sky subscription.
Yeah, exactly. You can kind of subscribe on the fly and download
subscribe
content on the, fly, which is great because, that opens up a whole new revenue stream for people that don't want to do the whole kind of satellite thing.
But also, it's a bit risky as well. I suppose it's only a niche of society, but it's like here in the US, you've got HBO Go, which is an HBO service similar to Sky Go, I suppose.
Right.
But you have to be a regular HBO subscriber. You can't just subscribe to HBO Go.
Oh, so it's an add-on rather than a...
Well, yeah, it's like a value proposition, which is a challenge today because, clearly HBO gets, some $20 a month from, X million households, and that's where the money comes from. So to suddenly maybe destabilize that in the relationship with the MSO to say, look, you can go direct to HBO, which maybe they'll be able to do, is a bit of a risk. And at the end of the day, there may be lots of iPads around, but there aren't that many compared to people watching on regular TV. So it's a brave HBO guy that says, okay, we'll just sell that independently.
Yeah.
And what price point would they put it at?
Well, moving on to the mobile category, James, we've got Apple saying they are, from their earnings call, everyone's put them at now the world's top smartphone vendor, pushing Nokia out. What's actually happened is Nokia has simply dropped. Not that Apple has kind of crept up particularly much, but
I guess Nokia's dropped and the Android marketplace is fragmented.
It's fragmented, yeah, exactly. So for a single operator, Nokia smartphones have declined 34% to still quite healthy 16.7 million units, but that's quite a decline from last quarter. Whereas
Nokia seems to be in a bit of a tailspin anyway, doesn't it? Really, relatively speaking.
Which is funny because it's, you know, they've been so strong for so long. Like in the beginning of mobile phones, you know, they were the one with the great user interface. Everyone preferred Nokias because they all knew how Nokias were used.
Yeah.
You always went for the next Nokia because you knew it would be like your old one and it all worked nicely. And I remember...
They had the Nokia communicator, that sort of thing that mm-hmm. flipped open. That was a lot yep. of people were great fans of those. They were pretty bricky, yep. but...
And I remember having Motorola phones back in the day, and there was a really cute one from a hardware perspective, but its user interface was rubbish. The interface
sucked. And they didn't even have stuff like an alarm clock, I remember. It was just like, oh, terrible. But the other interesting thing here is Apple passed RIM, the BlackBerry guys, global shipments.
So they are now the premium smartphone vendor in the universe, having come before the iPhone, having nothing. It's quite amazing.
Guessing that's because if I was a new enterprise, I mean, my brother's a little small sort of businessman. He didn't go to BlackBerry. He went to iPhone for his email.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a shame because there's a lot of good things about the BlackBerry as a business device. I know when I had a BlackBerry and an iPhone, I would reach a new country, switch both on, and within about 5 or 10 seconds, the BlackBerry would be there downloading messages for a whole $20 a month wherever I go in the world. Yeah. And iPhone,
I think BlackBerry's got some good... Yeah, it's got some pretty good compression stuff in it and security and the enterprise provisioning. So if you've got hundreds of phones, they can provision them pretty quickly. I think Apple's got a long way to go on that. And data compression, they just don't do it at all because they're just using regular IP and mail protocols.
Yeah. So, well, moving on to gaming, James, Roku, the Roku 2. You tempted? What do you think?
Well... I am tempted. I mean, this is quite a neat little device. It's another sort of hockey puck style thing. Three different models, basically, sort of good, better, best style. And
what do they do for you?
The one with it. Well, it does. It basically seems to do 1080p streaming video at the high end. The low end is only 720p.
Okay.
And the high end, they're all wireless as well. After our previous conversation about wireless maybe not being so good, the top end also has Ethernet.
Okay.
And also the top end has this kind of motion sensing remote, so a six axis, I guess an accelerometer based Bluetooth remote, so you can use it as a gesture based interface. I haven't seen the UX for this Roku box,
right.
So I don't know if that's integrated with that, and it seems to have some bizarre little blue tab poking out of the side with Roku written on it. It's almost like one of those tabs you pull out when you to activate the battery on something.
It's coming with gaming services now with this remote control. So, right, it's got comes with Angry Birds as a launch title, and presumably it has
only the top end. Only the top end comes with Angry Birds. Yeah, and I don't quite see how a motion remote works with that unless you use it to sort of ping the birds back. I suppose. I guess you could do that. You could use it to stretch the rubber band. Those of you who, I mean, I guess everyone who listens to this must have played Angry Birds. I'm surprised that they did a special port to this.
And
I guess they're looking.
Yeah, the Angry Birds has had 300 million downloads now across all these different platforms. That's amazing.
Awesome, they say. it's quite cool. I think the main thing is this might give me access. I was thinking about this because I want to be able to watch Amazon Prime on my TV.
And that's like Netflix, right? It's a competitor to Netflix for streaming content, right?
Yeah, and you get it free if you subscribe to the Amazon sort of quickie delivery service. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you do in the US anyway. But I've got no real means of watching that on the TV yet, although I might be hooking up a Mac Mini of mine to the TV, so maybe I will.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be kind of interesting. Yeah, and it gives you access to... Roku has 300 channels: Netflix, Amazon Video, Hulu Plus, Crackle, which is the Sony one, YouTube, music from Pandora, Last FM, RDO, and you can buy subscriptions to the NBA, MLB, NHL. I don't know what UFC is. So yeah, so it's a contender, and it's a nice bit of kit. I did notice all the other Rokus are on special sale offer in Fry's. I might have to make
for all the existing
trip
ones
to Fry's to see. And I don't know when this product is available either. You can certainly order it.
Right. When it's actually going to ship is another question.
Yeah. And then also there's been a bit of news about power usage. I mean, actually it's pretty old news really. People going on about set-top box using more power than a fridge and all this kind of stuff. This device uses as little as 2 watts when streaming HD content compared to Apple TV's 6 watts. That's a bit of a bizarre thing to stick in your press release, but there we go.
We did
miss out on a story on DVB-S3 earlier on.
Yeah, so...
Is that a late contender? Is this coming from the company, your current employer?
No, I don't think so. S3? No. It's I wish it was, but DVB S1, well, S was the satellite version of DVB. DVB S2 was the new improved, let's get a bit more bandwidth out of that spectrum. And yeah. DVB S3, I got excited by this because this is like, okay, 30% improvement in the bandwidth that you can get out of a satellite channel. But basically what they've done is, because we're using better filtering, essentially, they've reduced the guard band between two channels.
And made the transponder wider.
Basically, so it's almost touching the other transponder. It left only 5% guard band in between the two. So it's nothing really rocket science-y amazing that it's done, but I guess by using better filtering, it can allow the channels to be closer and hence have more space in the channel with less gap in between them. And that gives you a 30% improvement in bandwidth, which is not bad.
That doesn't seem to be related to the actual transmission format. That just seems to be a different transponder bandwidth. So I don't know.
Yeah, so it gives you... I think there's a few tweaks in terms of the actual modulation itself as well, but everyone was saying, how can you improve on DVB-S2? Like, that's pretty much close to the limit of how much physical data you can get down.
Can you break the laws of physics, the Shannon's laws?
And the answer is no, they just made the channel wider. But, you know, it still takes a technological challenge to actually be able to have channels that close and not kind of have interference from them. That's quite difficult as well. But so that's good. That means we'll be able to stream more content over any one DVB satellite transponder. And the reason why DVB-S2 has had any sort of traction at all is, of course, because of HD.
Indeed, yeah. But I'm not sure. And obviously, it's still pretty pricey to stick satellites up there. I don't know whether the retirement of the space shuttle this week is...
space shuttle's
making that more... Can't be making commercial launch any less less expensive by taking one of the launch vehicles out of the equation.
Exactly.
Although I'm not sure. I guess it was mainly used for proprietary missions and stuff, but did do the odd repair job.
Yep, the odd repair job and the odd bit of satellite launching. Well, James, I think that wraps us up for episode 166 this week.
Indeedy. Well, 166. Whatever comes next. Is it 167?
It could be. Yeah. Anyway, I look forward to talking to you next week on the couch.
Indeed. And thanks for listening, everybody. It's goodbye from me, James.
And goodbye from me, and cheers.
Bye.
This episode of On the Couch Podcast is brought to you by embeddedadventures.com, your source for embedded kits and things to play with.